Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
I'm Tim Gunn, author, educator, and Project Runway mentor, and you're listening to Heritage Radio.
Welcome back to another episode of Magnifico Radio, the weekly podcast featuring conversations in ethical fashion, clean beauty, and sustainable living. This is episode 38, and I'm your host, Kate Black. This podcast is an extension of my blog, magnifico.com, and that's magnifico.com, and my book, also called Magnifico, Your Head-to-Toe Guide to Ethical Fashion and Non-Toxic Beauty. Each week, I sit down with leaders and makers and designers at the forefront of sustainability to discuss their journeys and motivation. One of the recurring themes over the past three seasons has been the intersection of consumption and the exorbitant amount of waste created by the fashion industry. Today's guest calls it the crisis of stuff and has spent over two decades creating innovative and relevant solutions to the crisis of stuff. Stephen Bethel's first company, Bank & Vogue, has been a leader in wholesale used goods industry and is one of North America's largest recyclers. Bank & Vogue is also the parent to one of Europe's largest vintage clothing chains, Beyond Retro, with stores in London, Brighton, and Sweden. And now with his own factory in India, Beyond Retro is creating unique upcycled pieces, including this summer's sellout prison bag that was made of prison uniforms and sold out at Urban Outfitters across the country. Welcome, Stephen.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm really great. I'm absolutely great.
So let's start
I'm really great.
Good. Let's start with a little background. You grew up in Canada, and how did other people's stuff become your business?
Other people's stuff became a business that really how I started was, frankly, my love of Tuesday night. You know, walk down the road, and Tuesday night was garbage night in my city, and just saw the amount of consumption that, you know, somebody would have a scratched chair or a discarded piece of furniture, and thought, look at the amount of stuff that's available. And I spent my every Saturday with my parents as a kid at local farm auctions, and just looking at all the and falling in love with things with age and character rather than brand new things. So I grew up in the auction yards of Eastern Ontario, just falling in love with things that were unique and beautiful. And those are often found in discarded items.
And then, it's progressed over the past two plus decades, right? You've just kind of gone from Tuesday night treasures to now there's pretty much nothing that you won't send containers of stuff around the world. Like, can you just talk about the evolution of the business and how Bank & Vogue became one of North America's largest recyclers?
So about 20 years ago, we started working with a Canadian charity who was collecting clothing, shoes, purses, and belts, and literally couldn't find a market for them. I walked into this warehouse, it was in Ottawa, and there were 1,000-pound bales upon bales of mixed-use clothes. And was just amazed at the size and the volume and the opportunity. And literally 20 years ago, you know, it was back in pre-internet days, I went to the local library, found phone books for companies in and names for companies in the U.S. And that was the beginning of our brokerage business of Bank & Vogue. So we buy, you know, when a typical donor gives clothes to a charity, the charity, if they run a thrift store, will put 50% of it on the shop floor. Typically 50% of that sells, which means that the vast majority of the clothing, the shoes, the purses and belts that go to thrift stores across Canada and the United States, they can't sell in a thrift store. And so our company, Bank & Vogue, saw an opportunity to be able to take these 1,000-pound bales by the truckload and find homes for them, relevant homes in developing countries around the world. So We now sell between 40 and 60 containers a week of mixed-use clothes from all across the United States. That's about 4 million garments a week. And we find homes for them in Central America, South America, Africa, India, Pakistan. And so that burgeoning of the first day that I saw my first 1,000-pound bale, it woke me up to the possibility of how much was out there, but also the opportunity that these clothes could find a second life.
And there's a lot of misconception in the marketplace that this redistribution that you're describing is not actually what's happening, that it's actually dumping or something a little bit more nefarious. First of all, can you expand on how you think that misconception got bandied around, and then why consumers really kind of aren't supporting this industry and this idea of brokerage and the movement of stuff?
It's certainly, it's absolutely an oddity that we, in the North, we particularly in the last 10 years, where with fast fashion, where people wear something once or twice, and then it's spun around. And the reality is that those clothes need to go somewhere. The other thing is that a lot of the countries that these go to don't have an industrial complex. They don't have sewing factories. They don't have the industry to be able to support the broad array of product. A really good example of why this works is somewhere like El Salvador. On the one hand, El Salvador makes millions upon millions of T-shirts and sweatshirts in these enormous factories. But they don't need one common. They don't need T-shirts and sweatshirts in El Salvador. They need the array of skirts, dresses, and blouses. So it is an exchange where on one hand they're making T-shirts and sweatshirts, which are then sold in the West, and for a higher price than the variety of products that are sold. There was a really good study that was just done by the Scandinavian countries, got together and did an economic analysis of the impact of used clothes sales from Europe into Africa, and whether it was a harm or whether it was an add-on. And the reality is that at their conclusion, it's like a 200-page report, it talks about how, in fact, there's a huge economic multiplier. There's a shipping industry that's built around it. There's a trucking industry. There's local markets. There's small markets. There's family markets. And a lot of these are women entrepreneurs that are running these market stalls in the third world or developing world. So their conclusion was that this actually has a plus value to the economy rather than a drain. But certainly it's an open debate, and it's a healthy one that we all should be participating in. But also probably speaks to an original problem, which is consumption in the North, because that's where the problem starts.
Exactly. Consumption and production. And I think because you and I have known each other for a couple of years now, and these stats just continue to grow, especially around landfill. Like, it's surprising, because I also grew up in Canada, we never threw things out, but I keep seeing all of these numbers about landfill. And the latest number I saw was that let me just see where it is. The equivalent of more than 2 million average-sized male elephants is the total textile waste that Americans are putting in landfill. 2 million male elephants. And it's so surprising to me, but when I was preparing for this interview, I started to look at this article or a couple of series of articles that Huffington Post posted last published in September, and one of them was actually, it said, and part of it was clickbait, but it said, here's what Goodwill actually does with your donated clothes. And in the first paragraph, it said that they send them to landfill, which is not what is actually explained later on. It's further went on to explain that only a small portion, if they were wet or damaged or dirty, had to go to landfill. But it just kind of, painted this whole industry with a brush of everybody is going to landfill. And so how does your side of the fence kind of counter that?
Yes, for sure. There is a portion of clothes that do go to landfill, but it's small. It's in the single digits. the reality is that there is a vibrant economy for secondhand, and it's not just it's also not just in the developing world. So obviously, Beyond Retro in England and Sweden, we've got fantastic stores that where we're picking through and finding relevant product and turning that product onto putting it in a shelf and offering a consumer an alternative to buying new in the UK. So, you know, the excess of some of the American product is also an opportunity for resale in the UK and in Sweden at the Beyond Retro stores.
I love this. Sorry, go on.
No, and what's more exciting for us as a business is over 20 years, we started with the premise that, look, there's a home for this product, the used product, of which we spent 20 years going to 30-plus countries around and finding a second life and a home and making clothing accessible to people that didn't have it. Then there was also, as the premise was, not only is there a home for it, but there's an exciting home in a new setting. And by taking something that is in, you know, in a, there was a discard from a thrift store in America and putting it in the heart of fashion in London and it having relevance, that's a real success. But what's even more exciting is now with our remanufacturing is that not only have we proven that vintage in London can be part of the landscape of fashion, and that used can be part of the landscape of fashion, but we're now proving that remanufacturing of used goods can be part of the landscape of fashion. So whether it be our Versace print bag that's selling really well at Urban Outfitters, or a backpack which is being sold in our own stores, we're deconstructing garments and then remanufacturing it. So I actually think that our journey, Bank & Vogue's journey, as innovative and relevant solutions to the crisis of stuff is, like the first day I walked into the warehouse and saw these massive piles of clothes, you can either look at a problem and shake your head and go, this is just a disaster, or get excited about the opportunity. And that's what we've, that's that hope is what we've, what we see.
And you know what, you bring up a really good point, because I think actually consumers have maybe lost a little bit of that hope, because I think if they could think that, because there's a lot of designer guilt, there's a lot of producer guilt, now there's some consumer guilt, and it seems to be kind of log jamming all the industry as a whole. But when I hear you talk, and I hear you talk about the second life or the third life or the continuation of the journey of stuff, it all seems just a little bit better. And I love the story about Beyond Retro and how you kind of felt a need or saw a need to repurpose and then resell, especially in the UK, where they back in those days had a greater appreciation for vintage than they do in America. I think it's growing over here, but definitely they led the way. How many stores do you have now?
So in the UK, we have 4 brick stores. So we're in East London and Shoreditch and in Dalston, and Soho, right in downtown, the shopping district in Soho in London, and a shop in Brighton. But we also have 4 stores in Sweden, in Gothenburg, Malmö, and Stockholm. And we have an online store, beyondretro.com, where we have 30,000 unique items. And Beyond Retro, really what makes Beyond Retro work is there's a lot of very clever people at Beyond Retro who have this ear to the ground looking for trends, and they interpret the trends using vintage. And that's an exciting thing, because it's not about interpreting the trends and cutting down another polyester tree to make the trend. It's interpreting the trends through something old. And that to us is exciting.
It is, and I think you're like one of the forefront to have, you know, trend forecasters on staff. Everything comes again, you know, 1970s boho dresses are inspired by 1970s. So if you have your trend analyst saying, okay, you know what, this season it is going to be 70s floral, and your pickers are pulling out everything from all the reams of bales that you get, it's actually really authentic fashion. And so I think that that's must be one of the reasons for your continued success. And maybe leading to your...
And frankly, it's accessible. You know, our price points are within range. So not only is it a good environmental alternative, but frankly, it's a good price point alternative. So, that, you know, that part of this, that what is going to make the used business, and it's our tagline, innovative and relevant solutions crisis stuff, the word relevant is very important. It has to be relevant to the consumer wherever the product ends up, whether it be our remanufactured items or whether it be the vintage. A customer has to come in and have an affinity that's got to be relevant to the market that they're in, and that key relevance is, you know, is the fashion chase, isn't it? But
yes, everybody's looking for that magic piece that no one else has.
I know, it's funny. I live off the grid in Canada. The nearest telephone pole is 2 kilometers away from my house. I live in a house that has solar panels, and right at the end of my about 100 yards from my house is a family of bald eagles. And 10 years ago, there were no bald eagles in our part of Eastern Ontario, and now there's been these two pair of bald eagles that six. Baby eagles, and a lot of it is about our society changing the way in which we're making an impact. So I think that the rise of the way used clothing is being collected, I think the vintage business in across as a second home within the north, but also this remanufacturing that we're doing at Beyond Retro, these are all things that will make a significant impact. And kind of like my bald eagle story, so the chicks this year are about 8 weeks old. They're about 18 inches high. You think we can have a positive impact, and we can bring the bald eagles back. We can turn this clock backwards. That's what motivates me to, whether it be to help a charity get more value for their donated goods, or help a reseller in Central America. All of that is part of the evolution of a solution to the crisis of stuff. Because the crisis of stuff is very real. This year, the garment industry will make 100 billion garments. And we are coming up with solutions, but we all need to put our shoulder to realize that is a crisis, and we need to apply some resources and innovation to be able to figure out homes for that product.
That's true. Okay, we need to take a quick break. Hold on, and we'll be right back because I want to talk more about the factory.
We get them.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market believes in seeking out local, fresh, and seasonal food, and in supporting local farmers, makers, and the community as a whole, economically and agriculturally. Whole Foods Market believes in food that is vivid and colorful, fresh and full of nutrients. Food that connects you to your body, the seasons, and to nature. Food that helps you do more, sleep better, and wake up happier. Found in over 400 locations throughout the United States, Whole Foods Market only sells food that meets their standards, which means no artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, or sweeteners, ever. Whole Foods Market believes in real food. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more.
Hi, I'm Akiko Katayama, host of Japan Eats on Heritage Radio Network, where you can discover the latest topics and deepest knowledge of Japanese food culture with my cool guests. Tune in on Mondays at 3 p.m. to hear about topics like the science behind Japanese dashi, a rare conversation with a traditional sake brewer or sushi master, famously beautiful and obsessive Japanese coffee culture, secret recipes of ramen, how to make Japanese-style pickles, and much, much more. Please support my show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Thank you so much, and I hope to see you on Japan Eats.
And we're back. You're listening to Magnifico Radio. This is Kate Black, and today I'm sitting down with Stephen Bethel. So just before the breakout, we were starting to get into the factory, and I would love to hear a little bit more about the evolution of that, because just like Beyond Retro kind of fit this need of what to do with really groovy on-trend pieces, now the new factory is also filling a need.
It's, you know, what's kind of exciting is that as the solutions for the crisis of stuff come together, and there is a modernization of the collection of used clothes, what's happened over the last, particularly in the last 10 years, there's been about two or three major hubs around the world where used clothes are ending up. But the exciting thing about that is it allows for very specific product groupings to be able to be made because of the volume ends up in one place. And a really good example is cashmere sweaters. 15 years ago, it was really hard to get a container of used cashmere sweaters. But now, because of the centralization of grading, that is, these containers of used clothes come to one or three spots around the world, they can literally go through the sweaters and find the 1 out of 1,000 cashmere sweaters, put those 1 out of 1,000 into a pile, and sell cashmere, reuse cashmere as a commodity, which could then be re-spun into new yarn. So about 12 years ago, we started to work with a factory in northern India in a free zone, and started to look at the possibilities that, you know, there are some products that there are no homes for. There's no secondhand market for London Fog, Rain Max, or long trench coats like the kind Inspector Gadget would wear. So we said, well, what are the innovative and relevant solutions to this product? The other thing is that in our own shops, we were buying cotton shoppers to sell, and it really bothered me that we were buying something that was harvesting new cotton to be able to just make a symbol. And we really believe that our message, the way in which we tell it, like Marshall McLuhan, the medium is the message. The way in which we tell people about Beyond Retro is really important. So about 5-6 years ago, we started cutting up the Rain Max and putting our stamp on them and making simple totes out of it. And over the course of the last 5 years, we've been through a journey of seeing remanufacturing essentially what everybody's mom did for, you know, take the curtains off the wall and make Susie's dress. We've done that, except that we've done it on scale. So we have a factory that we're making 12,000 to 15,000 items a month, and these are taking the excess, the crisis of stuff, the things that have been discarded that don't have a secondary market, cutting them up and making them into a relevant item for both our own stores in London at Beyond Retro, but also for high street stores in the U.S. For example, we have a mini backpack, which is made of old jeans on the inside and Versace print. It's like a chainmail print on the outside. And that's being manufactured at scale. So we're bringing in product, we're sorting it, we're deconstructing it, we're remaking it into a relevant shape, and having great success in the Urban Outfitter stores in the U.S. selling that product.
Like with the prisoner bag. with all the prisoner yeah, made out of prisoner.
That was
uniforms.
Another really great story. You know that the irony is that there are almost 4 million prisoners in the U.S., and that means that that a lot of those people need prison outfits, and a lot of the prison outfits are these bright orange outfits, and there's no secondhand market for bright orange prison outfits in the developing world. So we took the innovative idea to cut them up and make a backpack or a carry-all out of the American orange prison outfit. They stand out. They look fantastic.
It's so amazing, and I think these kind of the distribution centers are fascinating. Number one, because I love the story about the shoe collection center in Pakistan. Can you just kind of talk about that for 1 second?
So what happened with the industry, the used clothing industry, is that the clothing needs to be sorted in a low cost center. So clothing is collected in England and in Europe and in America. It's put in 1,000-pound bales, and there's two or three centers. Pakistan has one, India has another, where literally the clothing comes in, and there are thousands upon thousands of hands that manually sort the clothes between men's shirts, men's long-sleeve shirts, men's short-sleeve shirts, making them into relevant piles, a product that can either be resold or recycled. And one of those centers is in that we're working in is in the Gujarat in India, and so this creates employment often in underemployed areas, but also is creating value by literally the sorting process, and that originally was done close to the centers where the product was originated. But the limitation there was you couldn't make very specific groupings of very specific commodities.
And so now if there's a random blue shoe somewhere in the world, it will find a home when it lands in Pakistan.
Yeah, so the really crazy thing is that imagine some of the large charities in the world or in the U.S., get given bags of shoes. You know, Kate, you go and empty your closet out and your husband's shoes out. It's spring. You put them in a bag. You throw them in a bin. The odd time that bag will open up and one shoe will get misplaced. And literally there's an industry now of people who buy containers of single shoes. So Bank Invoke buys those containers from charities throughout the United States. We ship them to Pakistan. In Pakistan, there is an industry, these massive warehouses, where they sort the shoes between sports shoes and dress shoes and high heels. Then they sort them by size. Then they sort them by color. And then they kind of make kind of. So they're not perfect shoes. They're kind of matches. And to us, that's an innovative and relevant solution, because somebody has what was going to be a garbage item in the north and has made a pair of shoes. And it's made having shoes accessible in another part of the world. To us, this is, I don't know, it's a great story. So absolutely. So we sell containers. We buy and sell containers of single shoes. And it's just exciting to have an innovative and relevant solution. And the crisis of stuff comes in all forms, whether it be cashmere sweaters or single shoes or trench coats or black denim jeans. It's just part of the array of the problem that we're trying to solve.
I love that. Because it makes me think, like, if I was a brand or a heritage brand, you know, London Fog is a good example, but I can think of a dozen others, and I wanted to make a shopper, or I wanted to make, you know, a couple of one-off pieces with old scrap, I would never be able to find all of those kind of pieces from past collections or, you know, kind of past products that we'd made. But in your sorting centers, that's possible, right?
What we're excited about is not only can we make can we find, hundreds of Pendletons or hundreds of specific brands, but to us is that we've gone through this mission that we've been on a journey with many others that vintage can be part of the landscape of fashion. But we're now on a mission to say that used garments can also be a component to manufacturing. and that this mission is close and near and real. And it doesn't necessarily have to be that we would take an item and make a new full item. It can be just a component. But our belief is it's kind of like the paper industry when we started them, 25 years ago. I got a piece of paper and it had 5% recycled content and everybody was excited. And then it got to 10 and then it got to 15 and 20. We know that we're on a journey that clothing will be fully recycled. And there's a lot of complications about how that is to be done. But this remanufacturing is a component of or a step towards a longer journey.
I love it. I'm so glad you could join me today. As part of my third season, I have these three questions that I've been asking every guest. So I wanted to know who or what inspires you?
Probably the most inspirational thing that I'd ever heard was, really briefly, I was in Robben Island in off the coast of South Africa. I had listened for an hour about what Nelson Mandela and the people went through. And as we were leaving, a prison guard said to us, an ex-prisoner who is now somebody giving the tour, said, enjoy your freedom. And it just struck that we have the ability to make a positive impact and enjoy ourselves doing it. So certainly my inspiration comes from an ex-prisoner and now a tour guide from Robben Island.
Ooh, I like that. And so do you also have a motto for your life?
I don't know. The motto probably would be those two baby eagles that are crying this morning at 5:30 in the morning. It's something that makes me rip the sheets off in the morning and jump into my slippers and get going in my day is to see that we can make a positive influence. We work on this crisis of stuff together. Frankly, the eagles will come back, and those echoes from the ululations from the baby eagles, they probably say the motto of the best.
That's awesome. And I love the whole kind of business ethos of what you've done and what you're doing, because it's ever evolving. But what's next on your bucket list? What are you working towards?
As I said, both Bank and Vogue and Beyond Retro, we're proud of the contribution we've made on a business level. The bucket list is continual, and none of this would work without some amazing talent in London and in Sweden and in Canada. It is to continue the journey on innovative and relevant solutions to the crisis of stuff. The bucket is probably a really good example. We want to collect as much stuff in our bucket and make sure that it doesn't go in the landfill and find a second home for it.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for sharing this story. Thank you for actually helping dispel a little bit about what goes on in your industry and helping people maybe get a little bit more comfortable about consumption as long as they embrace the second life and what can happen after the first purchase. Is there any way that listeners can follow you or your projects or Beyond Retro?
Yeah, by all means. So certainly beyondretro.com is our website, and there you'll see our Instagram feed and our Facebook feed. And on a business level, we have close to 300 employees worldwide. If you're a business interested in what to do with your stuff or want to create something out of your stuff, Bank and Vogue, so bankvogue.com. In Ottawa, we're always keen to hear from people.
That's great. Thank you again, Stephen. Thank you.
Thanks, Kate.
Thank you all for tuning into the Heritage Radio Network, to my engineer, David Tadashore, and to Metro Jesus for our music. You can find and subscribe to Magnifico Radio on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you find great podcasts. And if you like what you hear, kindly give us a review. I'd love to hear your thoughts and maybe also a rating. It helps us rank higher amongst conventional fashion podcasts and to push these conversations forward. To learn more about ethical and upcycled fashion, visit magnifico.com. Thanks for listening, and until next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.